Welcome, true believers. Of course, that would be what the great Stan Lee would always welcome anybody who watched a Marvel show in the 80s with, as we are into episode 2 of the new True Believers podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. Of course, it is the podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network that takes you into everything that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, otherwise known as the MCU. Guys, Kevin, we surprised everybody. We dropped it. Episode 1, total shock to everybody, including the family here at the Fandom Podcast Network. But
yeah, what was fun about that was that we came up with the idea of the show and recorded it, produced it, edited it, and put it out for broadcast in less than a week.
My head hurts. I need an Infinity Stone.
But we should warn people.
I need an Infinity Stone the next time.
We should warn people. Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. We want to warn people, though. Spoilers ahead for you True Believers. The MCU podcast here, the True Believers, will explore the MCU universe in detail in the movies, TV series, and comics. So, yeah, make sure you've seen the newest episode of WandaVision.
So, as we get started here with this latest episode of True Believers, as we travel through the realms of the Infinity Stones, the multiverse, a few TV sitcoms along the way. Oh, by the way, this podcast is officially in color now, too.
Cool.
Wanda color, Vision color.
We do have a studio audience of one right now.
Yeah, so and I was going to get to that because somehow he teleported in. I think he stole the Tesseract from Loki before his Disney Plus series started. We have a guest this week. He, of course, is the man who is the voice behind Type 40 and all things Doctor Who here on the Fandom Podcast Network. But you know what? I do know for a fact he is a fan of the MCU as well. Well, of course, it is our pleasure to welcome the host, the founder, the creator of Type 40, Mr. Dan Hadley.
Hello, hello both. How are we this evening? It's an evening for me. I think it's a morning for you. But with the time streams being as they are with these Infinity Stones, it could be whatever, wherever you are. If I'm canned laughter for this show, you know what? I'll take that. I'll have that. I love talking about the MCU.
Well, just consider it an honor to be invited, taken into Wanda's universe.
That's it. So yeah. I feel like I'm in my own comic book panel.
Well, at least you don't have to wear a quantum suit to get onto this podcast.
Yes, they chafe a little, those things do. Yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. But before we get started into the episode of WandaVision, Dan, I want to give you a chance to just real briefly tell everybody about your Marvel fandom, especially when it comes to the MCU.
Well, my Marvel fandom started in 1979. When I was bought my very first Marvel comic book by my granddad from the local newsagent, as we call them over here in England, the local newsagent round the corner from me. And every time my granddad used to take me round to this shop, usually to pick up his newspaper, I would get to pick a comic. I think the first Marvel one I had, I've got to be honest, I was mostly a DC guy, but I did love Captain America. I did love the Hulk, particularly because at the time he was on the TV, and the TV Hulk was way too scary for me, so I used to go for the comic book. As regards the MCU, started probably the same place it started for you. I was counting down the years until Iron Man was released. Iron Man was a big favourite book of mine in the 80s when I started collecting comics. Big time around 83, 84. Always loved Iron Man. And I knew that Robert Downey Jr. was right for that part. When everybody else said, why are they going to him? I got it right away. And I counted down the months, the weeks until that movie. And none of us were disappointed in my family. Haven't really looked back since. It's been a couple of blips, but mostly great.
That brings me to an interesting question because I didn't ask you this last week, Kevin. Real quick, do you remember what the first Marvel comic book you read was?
You know, I remember seeing them around, but the first one that I remember buying was G.I. Joe number one, was 82, I think it was. I remember seeing the Star Wars comics around, but I didn't really jump into those. I kind of jumped in those casually a little bit later on, but it was G.I. Joe number one, was 81, 82 when that came on. It was on the newsstand at my 7-Eleven store.
I kind of figured it was a G.I. Joe. I just had a good hunch on that.
Yeah.
So before we get started in the episode 2, Kevin, a little interesting thing dropped WandaVision episodes now have names.
Yes, this is very, very true. So when we first were recording this and we're looking up the names and stuff, they just said episode 1 and 2, especially on Disney Plus, on IMDb. And I think probably it was because to kind of hide, don't want to spoil anything, I think, wanting to go into it. Once people saw it, then I think they assigned the names to it. But episode 1 was called Film Before a Live Studio Audience. Of course, that's where Wanda and Vision struggle to conceal their powers during dinner with Vision's boss and wife. Episode 2 is called Don't Touch That Dial, where in an effort to fit in, Wanda and Vision perform a magic act in their community talent show. So, yeah. And when we were discussing with Dan, we were like, you know what? We need to have a little fun with our segments. And Dan, you gave us a great idea of what to call them.
I have my uses.
So what we're going to do is we have our segments and then we're going to call them phases. So phase 1, we're going to have our plot description and we have a little discussion between each act there. Other observations as well. Phase 2, we're going to talk about the cast and have a little bit of trivia. And phase 3, we're going to get a little bit deeper into the plot analysis and ties to the MCU and comics. And the final phase 4, we're going to have our episode final thoughts and maybe some next week predictions.
Ooh. Well, Kevin, with that, I have selected for this week's episode to power us the Reality Stone, because I think after watching episode 3 of WandaVision, the Reality Stone fits amicably with what we saw in this episode.
Yes. Episode 3 is called Now in Color. In Act 1, here we go. The episode begins with a 70s TV credit sequence as Wanda and Vision prepare for the birth of their son. Dr. Stan Nielsen visits the couple's home and checks on Wanda's health. He assures Wanda that she's pregnant, and Vision is surprised that it happened so fast. Wanda is 4 months pregnant, and Dr. Nielsen explains the size of the fetus in terms of fruit. Vision asks if they could be hypothetically concerned, and Nielsen tells them that first-time fathers tend to be nervous. As Vision takes the doctor out, Nielsen says that he's taking his wife on vacation later that afternoon. Vision asks Nielsen to keep news of Wanda's pregnancy a secret for the time being, and Nielsen readily agrees. As Nielsen leaves, Vision glances over and sees his neighbor Herb cutting through the concrete dividing wall with a chainsaw. Neither Vision nor Herb notice anything unusual, and Herb keeps cutting when Vision points it out. Vision goes back inside and discovers that Wanda is even more pregnant than she was before Nielsen left. Later, Wanda is using her magic to assemble the crib while Vision reads a book on pregnancy. The butterflies on the mobile Wanda puts over the crib come to life as she has in her stomach, while Wanda realizes that Wanda is now 6 months pregnant. He's glad to soon see their son Billy, and Wanda says that she was thinking of the name Tommy. They disagree on the name, and Vision calculates that Wanda will have her baby in 3 days. Later, Vision practices changing a baby on a doll. Wanda has false labor, and Vision suggests that they work on their breathing exercises as Wanda has false contractions. The lights flicker, and the water in the sink bubbles. They get out of the kitchen, and the effects stop. Vision checks on the neighbors. As the Jones house, Dottie asks her husband, Phil, if her earrings make her look fat. Their lights go out before he can answer. Vision comes back and tells Wanda the power is out throughout the neighborhood. Wanda wonders if the people in Westview are on the verge of discovering their secret. And Vision figures that it's more than that. He figures that something's wrong and warns that they're in uncharted waters. Wanda wonders if the baby will be human or synthesoid. And Vision assures her that it will be perfect, just like Wanda. Wanda goes into labor and uncontrollably levitates Vision into the air. She realizes that she's doing that and lowers her husband. Together, they breathe until the contractions passed. It starts raining outside, and Wanda tells Vision that her water just broke. Then a commercial plays for Hydra Soak Bath Flakes, thus ending Act 1. Kyle, first reactions, any observations there?
I was curious to see how far they were going to go with this pregnancy and how fast they were going to go to it. And like, we got our question answered real quick. They were going really quickly. I think there's a lot of women who would like to have their pregnancies go that fast.
It felt like one of those Star Trek TNG episodes when Troy gets pregnant and boom, she has it at the end of the, you know, halfway through the episode.
It was very interesting. I liked how they played it up on Wanda's powers, but there's a lot of little undertone things here that they do with Wanda and Vision. And I'm surprised that this is the third episode and they're already going to some of these ideas, talking about Billy and Tommy, which we'll get to because that's some big things down the line in the MCU and in the comic books. And I kind of like how the fact that there's starting to get to where the people are starting to tip things off, whether they mean to or not, like when he's cutting the hedge and he starts sawing through the wall and the Vision's starting to kind of get some things figured out, but Wanda's still a little bit in control, and I know we're going to get to that, but Dan, what about you? What grabbed you in this first act? Because there's just a lot of little Marvel things here.
There is. I was just hearing Kevin go back there through what happened just in that first phase of this episode. I think I hadn't really taken on board how packed this was with information, really. And I think that in some respects, that's a good thing when you want to go back and reflect as we are now, as you try and align it all up. I find it quite difficult while I'm actually watching the show. I'm not finding this show as entertaining as I think they're intending it to be. And I'm not sure why that is. So I'm hoping to sort of try and work that out during the course of this conversation.
Interesting.
I can see where you're coming from. I find it distracting because I'm enjoying the sets, and these sets are straight out of 70s television shows.
Yeah, this one is the Brady Bunch, isn't it?
The Brady Bunch. Yeah, yeah. There's a little bit of Mary Tyler Moore kind of feeling to it as well, and so I'm a little distracted because of how everything
it's beautifully put together without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, the costumes and everything.
Dan, I think one of the problems, because I had this problem more with this episode than I had in the first two episodes, there's too much too fast in this episode. It's breakneck. The episode is giving you as much information as fast as Wanda's going through a pregnancy. And I think there's a little bit of information overload going on in this episode.
I believe so. And yet in the previous two, it was kind of the other way around and not enough was happening. And I got a little bored. Once I sort of soaked in all that 1950s sort of Donna Reed show ambience, and then all the Bewitched sort of stylings of the second one, once the novelty of that had worn off, with that, I started to, it didn't hold my attention the way that I think that they wanted, that they thought it would, and the way that I'm used to from the MCU and from other Marvel shows, really, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., other places. So I'm finding this a bit of a lumpy ride so far.
Understood. This is different storytelling different, than what we're used to. Thus said, Act 2. Wanda and Vision take shelter from the rain beneath the table. The rain stops, and Wanda summons a breeze to blow dry the furniture. Vision calls Nielsen, but the lines are down and realizes that Nielsen has probably left for vacation. He super speeds out to get Nielsen before he leaves. Wanda has more contractions and hears a noise in the nursery. She starts to go in and the doorbell rings. She puts on a coat to hide her pregnancy. The door opens. Geraldine is there and wonders why Wanda is wearing a coat. She comes in and says that she has to borrow a bucket because all the pipes in her ceiling burst at once. Wanda goes out to get a bucket from the kitchen, and her coat changes as she has more contractions. She quickly takes the coat off and tosses it out the patio door. And Geraldine comes in to help look at the bucket. Wanda holds a bowl of fruit in front of her stomach to hide her pregnancy, and Geraldine finds the bucket, takes an apple from the bowl, and starts to leave. Before she goes, Geraldine starts talking about her temporary job. Wanda isn't interested, but tells Geraldine to tell her to distract her from the stork walking past. While Wanda tries to make the stork disappear in a cloud of red smoke and finally scares it away by throwing an orange at it, Geraldine hears it and Wanda says that it's the sound of her new ice maker. The stork comes back and nibbles at Geraldine's pant leg. then runs off before she can see it. Geraldine finishes her story by asking for something out of a spare room. When Geraldine goes in and the stork poses in front of the painting of the stork on the wall, Geraldine sees the crib and realizes that Wanda is having a baby and is surprised to learn that Wanda is pregnant. Kyle.
This is where I can see where Dan gets a little lost in the episode, because I think this was kind of where the episode gets a little bogged down with everything with Geraldine here in this part. But there was one part of this that just really, really drove me bonkers. And that's when Geraldine goes into the room, because you see two cribs in that room. I think I don't think they meant to do it, but you do see two cribs in the shot. There's a shot where they're looking at the one crib, but when it pans back, you can see the second crib behind them.
Yes, that definitely. I only watched this about an hour and a half ago. You're absolutely right. You could.
Now, if you're a fan of the MCU, you know the story, you know what's coming. But it was kind of like, if they're trying to go for a surprise for new viewers, they kind of flubbed that. So I don't know if that was done intentionally or if that was just a flub in the filming. But this is, like I said, this is kind of just where it felt like they were kind of going for the joke with the stork thing, and they were trying to go with kind of the sitcom-y side of it. And it kind of felt like it bogged down the story. I think for me, part of it was, and I think for a lot of fans of the MCU, they know what's coming and they were like, let's get to it. And this felt like it was just kind of like, okay, we're bogging ourselves down here, and we're not quite sure why, because when Act 3 rolls around, everything starts hitting the fan. But Dan, I'm curious to see if you felt the same way I did on this act.
Well, again, you know, when you reflect on it, you think, oh, there were some really nice moments in this. That scene that Kevin just mentioned there, where Wanda uses her powers to dry out the inside of the house, little things like that, little moments like that. They're very warm. They speak of the appeal of the character of the Scarlet Witch. I think that the acting as well in this, I think I've always thought that both of the actors were perfectly cast in these roles. And in moments like that, you get to see them have fun and really, really inhabit them, really bring them to life from the characters that I remember from the page. But then we're back, from my point of view, we're back within seconds into really quite a mechanical plot that is giving us these things at certain junctions. It knows which beats it needs to hit in this third episode, and goes on them in perfect timing. And as such, I don't know, it just doesn't feel authentic somehow. And I'm sure I'll put my finger on it as time goes by. You know what? I think a lot of it is with me as well. Hearing back what actually happened in those scenes made me smile more than watching them on screen. Now, whether it's because I'm spending the time watching on screen, looking for things, for clues, and for visual gestures and hints of what's to come, and not concentrating on the fun aspect, I don't know. But to me, these little wheezes where people are trying to disguise the fact that they're pregnant and all the rest of it, that's all fun. And that's sitcom, that's staple sitcom fare, wherever you are in the world. And yet, it's not funny enough to make me laugh when I'm watching it. And it's not dramatic enough or black or dark enough to chill me the way a good black comedy does, the way that David Lynch's stuff used to, you know, the original series of Twin Peaks in particular. I think that David Lynch's sort of shadow is definitely cast over this somewhere. So, yeah, I'm still chewing my way through this.
So it's interesting because the whole hiding the pregnancy thing is a big television trope. When they don't want to show a certain character, to have a baby, they do all these cool tricks to hide the pregnancy and such. It's funny, by the way, Kyle, I was looking, I had the episode playing in the background. You're right, there is the two cribs there. So I don't know if one's used for one thing or one's used the other, or it was like, nah, they're getting two. I was a little thrown off by the stork. I realized the stork is a symbol of babies arriving and stuff, but the stork being kind of annoying and persistent, I was like, what's going on here?
You think?
So I was starting to think, like, wait a minute, is there a tie to the MCU or the Marvel universe of a stork?
Do you think it's something to do with kind of what Kyle was saying there, that the stork being present and not going away? It's almost that Wanda's, a lot of what's going on and what she's creating, even within her own womb, is subliminal. So her body knows that she's having two babies, but even before her mind has. So that's why the two cribs are there.
Yeah, or it's like, it's a sign like, yeah, you got to speed this up. You're having kids now. So, that. All right, on to Act 3. Vision finds Nielsen at home working on his car. Vision picks the doctor up and super speeds him to his home to tend to Wanda. Geraldine makes Wanda uncomfortable on the couch while everything in the house starts going crazy. Wanda says that she can't do it, and Geraldine assures her that she can. She tells Wanda to push, and Wanda does so. Everything stops, and Wanda gives birth, and Geraldine holds up the baby boy and gives it to Wanda. Vision arrives with Nielsen and smiles at his wife and child. Geraldine takes Nielsen to the kitchen to give Wanda and Vision some time alone. Once they're alone, Vision drops his human disguise so his son can see his father as himself and names it Tommy. Wanda gives birth to the second child, and then Nielsen returns with Geraldine. He assures the couple that they'll have two healthy boys on their hands. Vision walks Nielsen out, and Wanda thanks Geraldine for their help. Outside, Vision tells Nielsen that he hopes the latter can still make his trip. Nielsen says that it's hard to escape small towns. He leaves, and Vision notices Agnes and Herb talking really kind of fast with each other, and Vision goes over and that they act and then they start to act normally, and then Agnes asks if Geraldine is with Wanda. Wanda and Geraldine look at the infants in their crib, and Wanda remembers having a twin brother named Pietro. She sings a Sokovian lullaby to her boys, and Geraldine asked Wanda if Pietro was killed by Ultron. Agnes and Herb tell Vision that Geraldine is brand new to the neighborhood with no family and no home. Wanda asks Geraldine what she said, and Geraldine claims that she said that Wanda is a strong lady. Wanda doesn't believe her and asks what Geraldine said about Pietro, and Geraldine feigns ignorance. When Wanda says that Geraldine should leave, Geraldine tells her not to be like that. Wanda sees Geraldine wearing a necklace with a sword insignia on it. Vision asks Agnes what she means by Geraldine having no home. Herb says that Geraldine came there because they're all... And he doesn't finish his sentence. Wanda asks Geraldine what the symbol is on the necklace and who Geraldine really is. Agnes tells Herb to stop. Wanda asks Geraldine who she is and advances on her. Agnes tells Vision that she better go home to do her macrame and rides off on her bicycle. Herb goes back inside. And Vision goes in to find Wanda alone looking at their infants. Wanda says that Geraldine had to rush home. In the real world, outside a group of old buildings with a Parkview sign nearby, surrounded by an electronic barrier, Geraldine falls out an electronic portal in the sky and hits the ground. Several jeeps and helicopters approach Geraldine, and the soldiers inside also approach. The end.
I'm getting warmed up here.
All right. Before we get into the cast comics nets, we got to talk just briefly first impressions on this part.
Oh, this is where things get meaty. So let's reference something we didn't talk about earlier. There's a scene where the Vision is starting to put some pieces together, and Wanda hits... And the screen just kind of flickers. And then it goes back, and it's like it never happened. Like, Wanda hit the rewind button again. So fast forward now to Act 3. First, we have the birth of the twins, Tommy and Billy. Very significant. We're going to get to them and when we talk trivia and a few ties to the comics in a later phase of this episode. But we start seeing what might be really going on, and it opens the door to all kinds of ideas and thoughts. First and foremost, Geraldine, when she starts questioning about Pietro, that right there is a tip. She knows more than what a lot of people, or at least you think, know. And then, of course, the conversation Vision has with Herb and Agnes, which, again, starts hinting at things and people hinting at a few other ideas as well. And, it, of course, ending with the episode with Wanda basically expelling Geraldine from whatever this reality is into through a barrier into a fenced in area with military. So I'm going to start playing. Let's put some clues together here. The Scarlet Witch has found this town of Parkview, which reminded her of a sitcom that she grew up with in a safe place. And she has used her powers to manipulate it into this reality she's created. And there are several, many people in that are trapped within this reality that she has created. And Geraldine, being a member of S.W.O.R.D., was sent in. That's why she doesn't have a home or anything like that. They found a way to get her in there. And with Monica Rambeau's ties already to the MCU and probably her knowledge, which they've said they're going to dip more into that later in the series of heroes and things like that because of her ties to Carol Danvers, probably just the right person to do this. I have my theories about the Vision, which I'll get into in just a moment. Of why now we have the Vision. And of course we now have Tommy and Billy, and it's going to be very curious to see what happens with these children as this progresses. Dan, I think you know exactly where I'm going with this.
Yes. And you've picked up on a lot of things and put things together for me that I've been sort of mulling over since I watched the thing. And obviously this is for old comics fans, there was a 12-issue maxi series back in the day, wasn't the Vision and the Scarlet Witch, and this relationship between the two characters. But in as regards the MCU, I think that all, even though Wanda has never been on screen for that long, I think her screen time across all the movies probably amounts to 3/4 of an hour, something like that. We don't know a great deal about that character. As a way of getting to know her, know the capabilities of her abilities, some idea of what their limitations or not may be. This expands them considerably, doesn't it? Because that's the final scene. All the meat is in this third act, isn't it? And that last scene, it leaves you in no doubt whatsoever that this domain is a construction of Wanda. And that people are, it's kind of like when somebody is in a coma and you can't, you know, you can't disturb them, you can't wake them up from a coma, but you can stimulate people to try to speak to them through familiar voices in the background. And I think that's kind of what they're doing here. I think Wanda is in a deep state at the center of all this. She's constructed this all around her. And that people from the outside world, agents from various places, are trying to, well, get, they're actually getting in and observing, making observations and drawing their conclusions about both Wanda herself and anybody else who's been sort of pulled into it against their knowledge. Am I reading these things right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so people could go underground, like they've got the manhole cover in episode 2. The guy comes up with the manhole. So, yeah. Okay, so one way into this realm is to go underneath wherever her barriers are. With Monica Rambeau, you say she's working for S.W.O.R.D. Don't know too much about S.W.O.R.D. myself. I think they came in after my time. But, yeah, she's obviously been placed in there to ask her questions in a very covert way as to not trip her defences and trigger some sort of reaction which may cause her to collapse the reality that she's created, endangering lives and maybe even unleashing some sort of force, which, who knows, I don't know about that.
This is a point where I want to get into my Vision theory, but before I do that, Kevin, do you have anything you want to weigh in here before I drop my Vision theory?
No, I'll wait for the other phase.
So my Vision theory is this. Everybody says, well, how's the Vision back from the dead? This version of the Vision that we are seeing is created by Wanda and maybe by her own subconscious to keep her in check from completely losing control. The Vision is there to act. It's a construct of her mind. We've seen the Scarlet Witch do this in the comics where she's actually killed people and brought them back to life. Hello, Hawkeye. and I think this is the case here where she's created this version of the Vision that's maybe her subconscious to prevent her from just completely losing control of what she's doing.
So are you suggesting then that Wanda, that she's not in a comatose state and not aware of what's going on? This could even be an experiment on her part.
It could be an experiment. Well, I don't know if it's an experiment unless somebody's experimenting on her. Like maybe AIM. We've had a lot of AIM references and Hydra references. Maybe somebody captured her in his experiment, using her as the epicenter of an experiment on the sound, or Wanda's just grieving?
I have some thoughts on that for phase three with our plot analysis and ties to the MCU. So we'll come back to that. I just wanted to ask real quick. We've kind of discussed phase two here. We have cast comments and trivia. Kyle and I have talked about our thoughts on the cast in general, but I did want to get a comment from you, Dan, regarding the cast and how your thoughts on the actors portraying them or any other notes regarding
I think they're all a delight. I think they're clearly enjoying themselves. The two leads are very comfortable in their roles, and they seem to be relishing the fact that they've got the stage, and they've earned it. I mean, when did the Age of Ultron, when was that released? Around 2014, something like that.
Yeah, I believe that 2014, 2015, right in there.
They've been playing these characters for 6 or 7 years, and both of them, for quite young actors, actually Paul Bettany might be older than I realise, but reasonably young actors, he says, hedging his bets. They've had huge success, both of them, but not, I don't think, any part that either of them is as closely identifiable with as these two. So it's great that they've got the opportunity to really flesh them out like this. The Vision, yes, I mean, Kyle, I that makes perfect sense what you've said. I've got no idea really where it's going or why or how he's there, but I do enjoy his presence. I think Paul Bettany's got great comic timing. But the supporting cast are just as good as the main two. I don't, apart from the lady who played the boss's wife in that first week, I know I've seen her in
Deborah Jo.
I've seen her in sitcoms and movies, haven't I, over the years? But
She played the mother on That 70s Show.
Okay, I never watched that.
And she was also, she had a small stint on Friends as the older lady.
Yes, that's it. Giovanni Ribisi's wife in that. Of course it is.
Yes.
Yeah, she's great. She's the only one I recognized. Everybody else, because I don't really recognize them from anything, I believe them in these roles. I think that the woman playing Agnes in particular is very, it's all very Stepford, the Stepford wife thing, like that. the guy who was trimming his hedge with the wall, you know, completely deadpan. I love all that stuff. And, for all the things that I'm finding about the way they're rolling out the plot, for all that I'm not being as engaged by that as I think they're intending, the characters, the performances are what's keeping me there, what's making me feel like this is a worthwhile journey that I'm on for the next 8 weeks, however long it is.
Cool. Feeling the same thing. I'm enjoying this ride. So let's get into some trivia here. We mentioned that the opening titles emulate the Brady Bunch. However, in the title sequence, the pictures are presented in hexagons in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The hexagon is the logo of the supervillain scientific organization Advanced Idea Mechanics, aka AIM, introduced in Iron Man 3. Thank you very much. if you don't know, Dan, I'm a big defender of that movie.
I like Iron Man 3. So I'm just really, really impressed because I noticed the hexagons and I wonder that is trying to say something to me. But of course, I remember AIM from the comics as well. Of course it is.
And of course, we had another mention of Hydra, the Hydra soap commercial was reminiscent of the famous commercial here in the States called Calgon Take Me Away, with the whole housewife in the bathtub, you know, at home and relaxing. The doll Vision uses to practice diaper changes is the Kitty Carryall from the Brady Bunch series. So obviously more throwbacks to the Brady Bunch there. Daydream Believer by the Monkees is played at the end. Davy Jones was Marsha Brady's favorite pop star in Brady Bunch. It is established that Phil and Dottie are a married couple. In the animated opening sequence, WandaVision, don't touch that dial, they were seen standing next to each other in front of the house. That sequence is also featured Herb cutting his hedges and Agnes standing on the other side, as they do in the installment. Now, Kyle, here's where we get to the very interesting stuff about the kids. Wanda and Vision debate over what to call their sons. Wanda wants Tommy, while Vision wants Billy. In the comics, the couple had twins named Tommy and Billy, who went on to be the superheroes Speed and Wiccan. Yep. Am I saying that right, Kyle? Okay. Tommy with super speed and Wiccan with magical powers. Wanda's choice of Tommy's represents her affection with her super fast brother Pietro, while Vision's choice of Billy represents his affection for his magical wife. I thought maybe, Kyle, you might want to briefly elaborate on the twins.
So here, the twins, which I went into somewhat about how they got created in the first place back in episode one. Well, the twins eventually do become real boys, per se, later on, thanks to some magic and a few other things that go on. But they're not quite with their parents either. Billy, who becomes Wiccan, is raised by another family. Wiccan is also portrayed in the comic books as gay, and he's actually in love with another hero, Hulkling, who has changed his name, who is a Skull Kree hybrid that was planted on Earth. Speed was introduced later in the series called Young Avengers, which it brought together Wiccan, Speed. You had Patriot, who turned out to be a young man who was from a comic that talked about the first black Captain America that was hidden by the government. And that turned out to be an interesting thing. But the other key fact, and the reason why you need to be excited about the fact that they are introducing Tommy and Billy, and it could lead to Speed and Wiccan, is because there is another character by the name of Kate Bishop. And that name might ring a bell if you've been paying attention to the creation of the Hawkeye series on Disney+, because Kate Bishop takes over, is the young protege of Clint Barton Hawkeye in the Marvel comic universe, and of course will be played in the Hawkeye Disney+ show by Hayley Steinfeld. So they are possibly setting setting up a Young Avengers story, because another member of that team is Cassandra Lang, who we know is the daughter of Scott Lang, who just happens to be, thanks to Avengers Endgame, a teenager now. So there are some I just wanted to say,
go ahead, go.
Young Avengers, when it came out, was drawn by Jimmy Chung, and it was actually an incredibly popular series, and these characters became immensely popular and still factors in the MCU to this day.
Hayley Steinfeld, for those of you who don't remember, she made a huge impact with the True Grit movie starring Jeff Bridges, and she got an Oscar nomination, if I remember correctly, and she's gone on to do a couple of the Pitch Perfect movies, several other things. She's also recorded.
If you want to remember, actually a really good underrated film, The Edge of 17.
Edge of 17, yes. Yes.
I hadn't realized that was her in True Grit. That is a great movie, and she was fantastic in it.
Yeah. Yeah. So phase three approaches us now, gentlemen. Plot analysis and ties to the MCU and comics, which Kyle has touched on a little bit. I've come up with a couple little notes here that we can touch on here. So moving into the final scene, the video changes aspect ratio from 4.3 to what looks like a 2.35. This effect has been used in several movies, kind of maybe signifying the transition from illusion to reality. Of course, we touched on AIM, the hexagon clues. There's references here, of course, to Avengers Age of Ultron with Pietro Maximoff and Ultron are mentioned. By the way, I love that scene in the movie where who's the agent that works with, is it not Coulson, the female agent? What's her name?
Maria Hill.
Yeah, Maria Hill is talking to her boss and is trying to explain all their abilities. And he's like, what? And she's like, he's fast, she's weird. Also, I did a little research online that Wanda's Sokovian lullaby to her babies are translated as such. I waited for you, and this day has come. My heart became home, full of light, full of light. The man and the woman in the commercials, there's been some speculation that those might be Wanda's parents, possibly. Kyle's shaking his head. I'll let him mention why. Wanda has the power of the Infinity Stones, Time Stone, Reality Stone, Space Stone, the Ether, whatever that was. So she's got some power to change some things. And the last question that I've brought up is Wanda the villain? Wanda seems in control. And the players, the neighbors and friends in the game seem hesitant to rattle the cage. Then when reality seems to reveal itself, Wanda shuts it down. the town seems real, and the town folks are real, and being forced to play the part in Wanda's new world. Kyle, I want to go to you first. Why were you shaking your head about the man and the woman in the commercials maybe not being Wanda's parents or some sort of vision?
Well, we talked about this. We talked about this a little bit in episode one. We have a little thing called the X-Men, and they are coming to the MCU down the line. And if you remember correctly, and Dan Hadley, you should know this, Pietro and Wanda's father in the MCU is the Master of Magnetism, Magneto. And so we have mutant ties. And yes, we have not technically had mutants yet in the MCU, but the X-Men are coming. And
it seems Wanda might be the first.
Well, and that could be what's going on here. We have not heard the word mutant muttered. We have not.
What I couldn't remember, Kyle, was whether, because I remember this obviously from the books, but what I couldn't remember was if there had been anything in the MCU content up to now which would contradict introducing Magneto as her father in this timeline.
Just in the aspect we haven't had the word mutant muttered yet, and how they, but if you remember, Wanda in the comics was actually initially raised by gypsies before Magneto found her. So there's some...
Yes, of course.
Matt, that's where the Maximoff name comes from.
He hunts her down, doesn't he, in those early issues of the X-Men?
Yeah, when he gets them to join the original Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. So there is that. But Kevin, I want to hit on something because... And all apologies to Davy Jones, but cheer up, Sleepy Genie. Oh, what can it mean? It is such a double entendre for this show because I do think Wanda is in a state where she does not realize what she is doing with her powers. And you talked about having Infinity Stone type powers. What the Scarlet Witch has had and what she has always had, even though they've shown some telekinesis and different things like this, her powers have always been kind of more reality warping magical powers. And in this MCU, she would be classified, because she's a mutant, she'd be classified as an Omega level mutant. She is that powerful. That's the highest power range of a mutant character. She has killed people and brought them back to life. She has made things happen. The biggest thing, I think, if you ever want, two biggest things that you ever want to see as far as the power level of Scarlet Witch is no more mutants, that which is the House of M, where Wanda wipes out 3/4 of the mutant power mutant powers. And the other one is a series called Avengers Disassembled, where she just uses her powers and just annihilates the Avengers. There's just so much there. I don't think Wanda is the villain, but I think Wanda is lost. And I think they're playing up the aspect that even in the comic books, she's never been that stable. And I think with all the grieving she has between losing Pietro, losing the Vision, I think this is what's spawning this. And again, it could be that AIM has maybe gotten involved and maybe taken her prisoner and using her as an experiment in her own grief and everything like that. But things are not going quite as planned.
There was a reason why I had Kyle go first, Dan. So
yes.
How do you feel about analyzing this plot here and the ties to the MCU comics? What are your thoughts?
Yes, I mean, that certainly all ties up with what I remember. I mean, I was reading the comics, I'd say seriously from around 83, 84, from Secret Wars with the Marvel stuff right the way through to, I think I dipped out a little bit in the 90s after the Age of Apocalypse. Went back to it around the time of Avengers Disassembled, funnily enough, which I absolutely loved that. And I'd forgotten how integral Wanda was to that. And yeah, this is all chiming. This is all completely true to what was in the books. And obviously it's been remixed to fit in with a much younger universe, a much more mainstream aimed universe. But yes, that all makes total and complete sense to me. The way you've knitted it all together, I'm very impressed with how you've managed to carry all that continuity inside your head.
My head hurts.
there are things that I've wondered about, and the things that I remember as well, you know, because some of these books I haven't read them for literally 30, 35 years, but they stay with you, don't they? I mean, particularly when you've got things like the Marvel Universe Handbook to when you've got that to hand, it's a quick.
The
quick
Mighty refresher. Marvel Handbook.
Yeah.
Kyle's been very informative when it comes to putting these pieces together in the MCU. But one thing I just want to mention real quick before we head to phase four here with our final thoughts and any predictions that we have for the next episode. I love how there's been throwbacks in newer stuff that's throwbacks to either movies that haven't been as popular in the MCU as others. You know, we get AIM to Iron Man 3. A lot of people don't like Iron Man 3. I love Iron Man 3. I love how Endgame, we got the throwback to Thor Dark World, which a lot of people didn't care for. And then this, we're getting Avengers Ultron references, which is the least favorite Avengers film for most people anyway. So I love how they're kind of like, you know what? You may not have liked it as much, but you're still going to have to rewatch it to get a different perspective on this. So, well, let's head into phase four, guys. Our final thoughts of the episode and any predictions for next week's episode. Let's go ahead and go with Kyle here. No offense, Dan, but I want Kyle to kind of do what he does so we can make think harder.
That's a little flex right there. I'm not ashamed to say it, but so we're headed to the 80s for the next episode of WandaVision if we're going by timeline.
Well, even though it was 70s, coming back on a door.
Yeah, that's true.
So where do you think
we could get some late 70s, early 80s tier.
Where the kisses are.
Is that your prediction?
And hers. Oh, excuse me. His. Well, I don't know if you noticed, but the bike that they were riding in this was a two-person bike like they do in Three's Company, which starred in the 70s. Anyway, go ahead. 80s.
The big thing here is going to be how much do they age the twins. This is going to be a big factor going forward now.
So do you think we could potentially see Wanda as Peggy Bundy with the Vision as Al?
I don't think they're gonna go late. Actually, what was that? I think we're gonna get more early 80s.
Me
stuff.
Too.
You
me
know,
too.
That's
maybe like some family ties kind of thing or something like that.
Please be Three's Company. Please be Three's Company.
I think we've got some big things with these twins. I do think episode four is gonna be the episode where things really we start to see a little bit of unraveling at the end of episode three. I think we're gonna start seeing a little bit more of the outside world in episode four. And I think by episode six, the sitcom reality is probably to the backseat of what's going on in the real reality. I think we're getting close to that here. The only thing I could see too is that maybe we have a little bit 80s stuff, but we're going to have an episode here that I think is going to dive much more into the Monica Rambeau character. And kind of maybe that's the episode that gives us the outside look to what's been going on in WandaVision. Episode four or five seems like the time they would do that. So we could kind of set up the remainder. So I'm going to be curious to see which direction they go in there, but there's a lot that can happen here. There's a lot of ways they can go, but after the end of episode three, if I wasn't all in before, and I was because I was intrigued by the mystery of it, I'm really all in to see just how far they're willing to go. What is Marvel going to do? And is Marvel going to set up the possibilities that they've created in this show? And again, we have to keep in the back of our minds, this show leads directly into Doctor Strange 2, the Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, so, is that confirmed then? That's definite.
Elizabeth Olsen is filming in London with Benedict Cumberbatch right as we speak. So,
yep.
Cool. There's a path here.
They might be on a little break because of COVID, but she's in London now.
So there's a path here, but Dan, I'm kind of curious about what you think we might see.
I'm focused on. See, I haven't got a head full of where all these big plot lines can all fit in, and I haven't got the encyclopedic knowledge of the MCU. I've seen most of the films 2 to 3 times, but I'm not keeping quite as good a track of the various grooves as you are. But those comic books, they stay with you once you've read them when you're at an impressionable age, and those characters, particularly when the Marvel Universe itself was not so densely populated as it is now, and not so multi-generational. Certain characters stay with you. And the character that I'm focused on, Monica Rambeau, she was my Captain Marvel, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm delighted to see that character on screen. I would have had her as the star of the Captain Marvel solo film myself rather than Carol Danvers. But you know, that's another story. But the character that I'm really interested in is the next door neighbor, Agnes. You're nodding at me, Kyle. Is that who I think it is? Is
that... that's what the hinting is.
I was gonna bring this up, but go ahead.
that's Agatha Harkness, isn't it? From the
that's the series, Fantastic Four. And there's been enough little hints that it could very
wearing,
well be.
She's even wearing every scene that she's in, every timeline, every time zone. She's wearing the brooch.
That brooch that she is wearing, or necklace in this particular episode, is very similar to the same thing that Agatha Harkness. Is that her name right? Agatha Harkness is wearing, and for as we said in the first episode of True Believers, Agatha is the Salem witch trial survivor that becomes a mentor to Wanda. Yes, correct, Kyle?
So... Well, obviously, she looks a little different without the white hair, and she's and the black cat and the shawl, or the when she was like you say, she was Wanda's mentor, and she was something to do with Franklin Richards in the Fantastic Four. That's where I remember her most.
She was Franklin Richards' nanny for a time.
Yeah, and she then segued into, was it the Vision and Scarlet Witch Maxi series, or was it? I thought so. So you see, it's all in there. I've just got to sort of poke around and work it all out. So that's a common. It's not just me, then. It must be. Because Agnes.
Dan, I just have one thing to say, though. If you seeing how well you remember the Vision in Scarlet Witch, I don't think we're going to see the Salem 7 villains in this series.
that was, I suppose, the plot of that whole series. That was a product of its time. That way of storytelling, in some ways it was so simplistic compared to what we get now, isn't it? It wasn't as high concept, but they were simpler time.
So I'm a big fan of Catherine Hahn, who plays Agnes, and that's one of the things I'm looking forward to the most, because of what I've learned watching these YouTube videos that are helping me give clues for stuff that I didn't read growing up, and with Kyle's help and such. I'm really curious about this character and hoping that this is something that we will see. But I'm also curious as to what are the main threats to the Avengers and the MCU heroes going forward. We've talked, there's, discussion of maybe Mephisto. Is that who it is, Kyle?
Mephisto. Right? I think we see him in a different show coming.
But I mean, really? All of these are going to have to tie together in the larger picture when we ever get the next Avengers film. And so I'm kind of curious to see what the big threat is. And that AIM obviously seems to be the villain side of this. Then we get the sword, which is supposed to be protecting us from, the super or the cosmic threat beyond Earth and such. And so I'm very curious to see where this is going to go. I don't know if I have any predictions per se, but I am going to say that I think that maybe we'll get more answers to Agnes herself and the bigger picture of what's happening outside of, was it Westview? Is that the name of the city?
I thought it was Parkview.
West something? No, it's West something. It's West something. That's what I think is going to happen. So Kyle, lead us out of this.
Well, before we get to the closing out here, Kevin, I've determined with using some reality warping and a little bit of Franklin Richard powers, your Excelsior score this week is a 3, which is just enough to give you a malfunctioning Doombot.
Wait, 3 out of what?
Well, it's a 3 out. You've scored 3 Excelsior points this week.
Oh, okay. Three. Okay, last week it was 4, so I'll take it.
Yeah.
That's 3.
Doesn't give you enough to acquire a malfunctioning Doombot.
I don't know what that is, but if I did, I probably would have gotten a 4th Excelsior. Yeah. So I'm fine with that.
Dan knows exactly what it is. That's why he's laughing. But we are going to... the reality stone is glowing a little bit too much for my liking, so I think I'm going to just put it back in the Infinity Gauntlet. I still haven't got that orange soda smell from Michael Morris out of that thing, by the way, Kevin.
I don't
believe that. I want to thank Dan for being here. as well, you know, dropping in for True Believers. But before we go, just a reminder, you can find the Fandom Podcast Network in a lot of places, and including our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can also use the Podbean app and search for the Fandom Podcast Network. We are on all major podcast catchers, whether it's iTunes, iHeartRadio, or so many others. And of course, we have our YouTube channel, which you can find not only great video things such as Culture Clash Live and special edition things, but also all of our audio podcasts do go up on our YouTube channel. Dan, you got your own Type 40 feed here on the Fandom Podcast Network.
Yes, Type 40's got its own dimension as well now. Type40.podbean.com.
Yes. Multiverse.
The Fandom Multiverse. The dawn of the Fandom Multiverse. Yes, so Type 40's got its own parallel feed now as well. So you can skip over there as we make our way through Season 3 of Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast. Got off to a flying start, so thank you for your support here at the network and all your support out there, all your listeners. And if you haven't been listening, you wouldn't believe in the kind of thing you've been missing out on. We've got some great exclusive interviews, some of our biggest episodes ever, in fact, as regards the kind of guests that we've been able to get on, the conversations we've been having, and the amount of downloads and streams out there. People are lapping it up, so yeah, thank you. And there's more to come in 2021.
Yes, and of course, too, you can contact the Fandom Podcast Network on our Facebook page, Fandom Podcast Network. Email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, or follow us on Twitter at Fan Pod Network. Of course, also visit the Type 40 Facebook page as well. Dan does a phenomenal job with that, as well as the Spacebook. I'm Kyle. You can find me on Twitter at AKyleW or on Instagram at AKyleFandom. Kevin, where can people find you on the social media?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_feed.
And Dan, where are you traveling the TARDIS to on your social media feeds?
Yeah, I'm scattered through all space and time. You know the score. But mostly on Twitter and Instagram in these dimensions at the Spacebook. That's where you can find me on those two platforms. Look me up or in that Type 40 Facebook group. Yes, there's lots of real-time, extra-dimensional chit-chat going on every day there about all things Doctor Who.
You're also on Twitter at Type 40 Doctor Who.
There's Type 40's own social media too. Yeah, tweet us at Type 40 Doctor Who, and there's a separate Instagram feed for Type 40 as well, where we drop out little nuggets when the special anniversaries. There's a Doctor Who anniversary for every day of the year. I swear there is. This is what happens when you've got 60 years worth of franchise. Yes, but if you can find us there on Instagram as well, dropping out little pictures here and there and putting the odd question out to followers all over the universe, all over the Hooniverse.
Yeah, there you go. Just don't let Wanda rewind you. Finally, there's a couple great ways to support the Fandom Podcast Network. Visit our TeePublic store, teepublic.com. You can find all the gear of the Fandom Podcast Network, whether it's a shirt, a mug, a pillow, hoodie, anything there. Sales is coming up, I know, in the next week or so, also on the TeePublic store. So lots of things going on there. And finally, of course, leave us reviews. We especially love reviews on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Those 5-star reviews are great, you know, but I just want a 5-star review because the more stars I get, that gets me that much closer to an actual Captain America shield. That's all I'm saying. So, you see, that or web shooters. I can't make up my mind, but I want to thank everybody again. Of course, my co-founder here, Kevin, my co-host, Mr. Hadley, for showing up. Wanda's going to make it rain inside, guys. So with that, I'm just going to say thank you, True Believers, and we will see you next time here on True Believers, a Marvel MCU podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network.